afternoon. Whoops. And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
What am I smoking?
Nobody telling me.
Oh.
You're giving me hand signals.
Oh, you're going to learn hand signals.
Mysterious.
This is radio. Come
mysterious
on.
Hand signals.
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Right now, you can get some great deals on Honda generators, steel products, John Deere products. Go in and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call, 226-9226, or get them on the web at Redding Pape Machinery. Not Redding Pape.
You were going to do ReddingTractors.com, huh?
Yeah, I know. PapeMachinery.com.
Because that was a great website.
Oh, it was.
It was a great URL that I invented.
That's right.
It just seemed so easy.
Yeah. It's still live, by the way.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. It goes right to PapeMachinery.com.
Oh, it does?
Oh, sure.
Redding Tractors does?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
gosh. My yeah. handiwork is still working.
Oh, yeah. It's still there.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So what's going on today? I mean, we have...
we have good news today, which is confusing, because usually, you know, we're sort of the bad news people with a smile.
We don't have to stand in line to go buy something with a mask today?
No.
Oh, that's
no,
good.
No, and that's really,
I had to do that
really getting out of hand.
That wasn't fun.
Bill's angry with, what is it, Home Depot?
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, you have to go there. You have to stand in line. They'll let you in one at a time. And then when you finally do get
in.
Do
they follow you around to make sure you're not near anyone?
No.
How do they know what you do when you go in?
Oh, they don't. They just turn you loose, but then you get to go standing in line that's a mile long because they only have two checkers. So, yeah, it's a pleasant buying experience. But listen, I think it's going to be that way for a lot of places once we get reopened up. I mean, it's very strange out there right now.
We've gone to Lunacyville.
I see a lot of people driving in their cars with a mask on.
Yeah.
Is their car going to give them something, or are they afraid to give their car something?
And as we pointed out,
how that works.
As we pointed out last week, there was that man, I'm sure he's not the only one, who asphyxiated himself and crashed into a telephone pole because he was wearing a mask in his car.
Yeah.
That's what would happen to me if I was wearing a mask in my car.
Yeah.
So I won't be doing that.
Yeah, but he didn't get the virus. That's the important part.
No one knows. Let's face it, if it did, I mean, now, you know, all due respect to the Darwin Award.
You mean
there.
No disrespect, Louis?
I mean no disrespect to the Darwin Award winner, but if in fact he did hit the telephone pole after he was wearing a mask and asphyxiated himself and went to the hospital and ultimately died, they would have put down he died from the virus.
Yeah.
So just so we're clear about that.
That's right.
Anyway, so enough of that. Our guest today is he actually has been on quite a few times, and we have talked about electromagnetic pulse commission, the EMP commission. We're going to throw that around a lot today. His name is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. He also served on the congressional EMP commission. There he goes, first time. The Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA, just, you know, for good measure. He has a PhD in history and another one in archaeology and some more in strategic studies, which is what led him to the CIA. They said, hey, this guy's smart. We should get him, have him come do stuff that we can't tell anybody about.
That's right.
Kind of a thankless deal, probably. He has written a whole bunch of books, and I've put those on the website. I do hope that you will go to the page today because the article we'll be discussing is posted there. And you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. Sorry, I'm a little off my game. I'm having some – I'm in the death throes of – what do you call it? Food poisoning.
Food poisoning.
Yeah. Yeah, for all of you who think that you got a stomachache after you ate something and had food poisoning, yeah, that's not it. There's more. heinous. So anyway, I've listed all his books. His most recent one is The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020. And the article today, scrolling, it was in the Washington Times, actually. Made in America, Protecting the Power Grid. And that just came out May 6th, so this is hot off the press, and I guarantee you didn't hear anything about it because everybody was obsessing about the stupid virus or some other unrelated mania. So, Dr. Pry, where would you like to start today, and thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I think I should apologize to your audience because I was very amused by the, you guys were both on a very humorous roll there with your conversation. I think I'd much rather just listen to you go on like that for a couple of hours instead of talking about EMP. And
oh, there's more.
Oh, please don't get her started.
Well, maybe we should start with that. And, you know, there's, you know, as always, a lot of things to talk about, today. You know, if we have time, I'd like to also talk about, you know, the developments with China, you know, where they are, you know, now talking about building 1,000 nuclear weapons and 100 of these new DF-41 ICBMs that would basically make them a nuclear power equivalent to the United States. And, you know, whereas, you know, so it's a whole new dimension to the nuclear threat that's rising up. I actually think they're propagandizing there, because I think they're already probably have as many or more nuclear weapons than the United States. But that's another topic that we could talk about.
And after their stellar behavior with the virus, I think for the people who didn't think that they were a threat or that there wasn't the propaganda element, I'm hoping everybody got schooled.
Me too. I mean, you know, people have for decades been taking seriously this idea that the Chinese only have, you know, a small number of ICBMs, about 20 ICBMs, you know, a larger number, but that their whole arsenal is maybe 100 or 200 weapons, if you count the tactical weapons as well, and so that they've only had a tiny nuclear arsenal. We've had no way of independently verifying that. You know, it's all based on relying on the fact that the idea that they're telling us the truth. And also that they have a no-first-use policy, so that they would never use nuclear weapons first. But, again, that's not topic number two. Let me start off with the more boring topic, since people at least are temporarily amused by your wonderful introduction before their eyes completely glaze over.
No.
And and talk about this new executive order that the president just passed on May 1st, you know, which is an executive order to protect the national electric grid by requiring that that we try to have critical grid components manufactured here in the United States, and that to set up a board of review to look at the risks about electrical equipment that we buy from overseas. And I think that this is more important than the executive order itself, is that it's sort of a landmark moment in our national security history that indicates that those of us who have been arguing that the electric grid is vital to our national security and it should be included among our strategic thinking in Washington has finally prevailed. You know, to listeners, this might be a common sense thing, because everybody understands how important the electric grid is to our survival. But it hasn't been a common sense thing or an accepted thing in Washington, I think, up until this executive order. You know, for years, the electric utilities themselves have been arguing that national security is not their business and shouldn't be their business, and that instead of protecting the grid, if Washington thinks there's a threat to our electric grid, then the grid should be protected by Washington going to war, by launching a preemptive strike on China or Russia or whoever, and not engaging in activities to protect the grid itself from an EMP attack or cyber attack or physical sabotage, that we should trust them, the utilities, to protect the grid against these things, even though they have no expertise in it. And for a long time, the Washington bureaucracy, part of it couldn't make up its mind, you know, who to listen to, the national security experts or to the electric utilities. And you have the problem is made more difficult by the fact that utilities have got deep pockets, $150 million a year to spread around and bribing Washington officials to do nothing and to listen to their point of view on this. Plus, they have two cozy relationships with the regulatory agencies like the U.S. FERC and the Department of Energy. You know, but this executive order signifies that the White House and, in agreement, the rest of the federal bureaucracy, the alphabet soup of federal bureaucracies, the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, and other agencies relevant to electric grid security have finally concurred and said, yeah, we need to think about protecting the electric grid as a serious part of our national security strategy. And this is something, this act, this executive order is something I'm sure the utilities are not going to be happy with, because they've been saving money by doing things like buying control systems, SCADAs, from China, for instance, for many years. And we have a lot of Chinese electrical equipment technology embedded in our electric grid.
Right.
Finally, our
bureaucrats have said, you know, maybe that's not such a great idea, you know, because the Chinese can embed logic bombs in these things and maybe design them in a way so they'll be even more vulnerable to EMP than they have to be. All kinds of reasons for not doing that. And even buying stuff from our allies, like, for instance, the foundations of our electronic civilization are based on a extra high voltage transformers, EHV transformers. Most people have probably never heard of them, but they are to our civilization what roads and aqueducts were to the civilization of ancient Rome in the classical world. We can't survive and operate without them.
Well, hold that thought, Dr. Pry, before we launch down that road. But, you know, I do want to go back to a logic bomb, because I was kind of wishing maybe we could release one of those. I know it's probably something bad, but it sounded kind of exciting to me. We could use more logic these days.
Yes, that's right. Are you asking for a definition of a logic bomb?
Yeah, when we come back, let's get the real definition of a logic bomb. I stopped listening at that point. I was kind of excited about it. Distracted, how's that?
There you go.
I was distracted. Hardly ever happens. We'll be right back.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
You could just add in Home Depot right behind that. Could be the new Home Depot song.
There you go.
Ugh, the new coronavirus song. Don't stand so close to me, because we're all freaking out. Hey, I forgot to tell you guys that you can also catch us on channel 23.7 if you have rabbit ears. It's channel KRDT on the American Uncensored Network. Uncensored, I guess, is why they let us on there or something. Not that we did anything bad, but I guess we're not fit for prime time. We only get to be uncensored. But we're good with that, because we like it, and it's fun, and we hope people get some good information. Okay, so, Dr. Pry, what the heck is a logic bomb?
Well, to give you an example, you know, a logic bomb could be, you know, a chip that is designed to operate a SCADA. That's a system control data acquisition system. It's a control system that, for example, might regulate the way electricity flows through the grid, flows into the transformers and the rest. So you might have a chip that's designed upon receiving a signal to stop doing its normal function and start calculating the value of pi, you know, which is a infinite kind of a thing, and it would lock that system up so that it wouldn't work.
Mm.
Or there's other kinds of things. An example of a bug that you might characterize as kind of a logic bomb is the Stuxnet worm, you know, that was designed by the United States, and the Israelis, Mossad, managed to insert it into the uranium centrifuges in Fordo, the underground ultra-secure complex that Iran is using to build, to enrich uranium, they say, for their peaceful program, in reality for their weapons program. And what it did was it made the people who are running the centrifuges think it would send a signal to them, a message that everything is fine with the centrifuges, but in fact it was causing the centrifuges to spin in a wrong way so that 10 or 20% of them self-destructed. So that's basically, you know, it's a cyber bug that is designed to do bad things to your control systems that can cause them to fail catastrophically.
Yeah, and if that's something we could do, I think it would be naive to think that they couldn't do the same thing to our
grid system.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, we're concerned that maybe they've already done it. You know, back in 2017, or was it 2018, when the Russians had that big exercise. I think you actually had me on to talk about it. I think it was Vostok 18.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was possibly the largest military exercise in world history. You know, they had in September, where they had 300,000 troops and 30,000 tanks and other vehicles involved. It was basically a dress rehearsal for World War III that was going on. But a month or a month and a half before that, and they made a big deal about Vostok 18, but a month before that, quietly, you know, they tried to insert, they did insert, hundreds of cyber bugs called Dragonfly into the U.S. electrical network. And this got the attention, this was actually in the press, briefly, in July or August of that year. There was a big conference that was headed up by Vice President Pence. We were standing up a new cybersecurity agency, as a matter of fact, as part of the Department of Homeland Security. And that flashed onto the news media screen for a while, the fact that Dragonfly and Energy Bear and a bunch of other, you know, we don't know what these things are for or what they were trying to do. Obviously, it wasn't good news. I'd published an article at the time suggesting that this might have been part of the dress rehearsal for World War III, and that they would have attempted, before they actually launched a shooting-type, classical, traditional war, if they got in a conflict with us, that what they would probably attempt to do first is take out our electric grid by means of cyber attacks and EMP attacks and physical sabotage, so that they wouldn't have to fight the big war. And if that didn't work, then they could fight the classical tank missile war, you know. But the coincidence of that effort to where they apparently did succeed. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security had warned that they had gotten in and could control and black out our control systems. And after that, there was no more reporting on it. There was members of some big shop from one of the utilities was claiming this was overstated or something to that effect, and then there was no more reporting on it. So something like that, we're much more open, a much more open system. The Fordow complex in Iran, you'd think it would be impossible to penetrate that, you know, because it's not connected to the Internet or anything like that. It's an underground facility, you know.
Sure.
Mossad had to. There must have been an agent that they got in there with a memory stick or something who was able to. That's the only way I can think of that they could have gotten the Stuxnet worm in. So if you can penetrate a high, ultra-secure system like that, you know, it's obviously easy, you know, to penetrate our system, which most of our utilities are connected to the Internet. And especially if we're relying on equipment of foreign manufacture. And I'm concerned not just about the stuff from China, which we obviously shouldn't be buying and putting into our electric grid, but even equipment from our close allies. I was talking about these extra high voltage transformers. This is really a tragedy, you know, because we invented the EHV transformer. It was invented by Nikola Tesla. We invented the whole electric grid. You know, Tesla invented the electric grid. And, you know, these modern EHV transformers, while there have been improvements, I mean, fundamentally, it's the same thing that Nikola Tesla invented. You know, they are enormous. They weigh hundreds of tons. It's what enables you to take electricity from something like Niagara Falls, you know, hundreds of thousands of volts of electricity, and then project it all the way down to New York City. And then it's stepped down by another big EHV transformer, and then through a series of transformers, so that it can go into the distribution system, you know, so something like 750,000 volts gets stepped down eventually to 110 volts, so you can use it in your house.
So why don't we make those? When did that all go sideways and start outsourcing components like that.
Where the EHV transformer is concerned, I'm not exactly sure when we made the last one. You know, used to be made by Westinghouse and General Electric. The first ones were made by Westinghouse, as a matter of fact. And I just think they were a victim of this stupid world trade globalist, you know, theory.
If we all just work together, it'll be magical.
Right, exporting our manufacturing capabilities overseas, that we're going to move beyond being a smokestack manufacturing kind of an economy, which is an old-fashioned way of thinking, and become a service economy, and that was very imprudent, you know. And anyway, we are trying to reconstitute our ability to build the EHV transformers, but it's going to take many years before we know that we can actually do it, you know, because now we do have some facilities, some of the big manufacturers that have said that they're going to start manufacturing EHV transformers in the United States. And, you know, but we won't know whether they've actually done it, because there's a lot of craftsmanship. You know, you can't mass produce these things. As a matter of fact, the worldwide, we have 2,000 of them in our system, okay? At least 2,000 of these big EHV transformers that our civilization depends upon. And the total global capability to build, I mean, all the countries in the world that can build them, the total production capability is 180 per year. 180. And we have 2,000.
Is that from a material standpoint, or I mean, if the technology hasn't changed that much, why is it so difficult to make them?
Because the windings have to be done by hand, and every transformer has to be designed differently. They don't serve. They don't operate exactly the same. I mean, to explain that a little bit differently, you know. If you think about, you know, where a generating facility, take that Niagara Falls situation. I was talking about Niagara Falls to New York City, okay? You can't take the transformer that works at Niagara Falls and then the one that works at New York City and say, put that same transformer at Hoover Dam and then put the New York City transformer in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The reason is because there's a difference in the distance.
Right.
And
custom.
That, exactly. You know? And so it's got to be custom made for that particular geographical reality.
Okay.
And also the way Hoover Dam generates electricity and all the rest. And the number of windings, the way the windings are done, and then there's other technical features. It's all done by hand. An EHV transformer can't be mass produced. It's
right.
A custom job. Everyone
is
unique. And can we do it? Do we have the craftsmanship? You know, Brazil tried making its own EHV transformers. You know, an EHV transformer should last you 35 to 40 years. And Brazil discovered after 5 years that its transformers were failing because they didn't have the craftsmanship to do it. And so we won't know, you know, until 5 years. And I don't even think we've installed one made in America yet. But someday when we actually make an EHV transformer here, we really won't know for 5, 10 years until the thing actually is done right.
Because you kind of have to test it on the job.
Well, that's exactly right. You
Great.
Have to test it on the job. It's not the kind of thing, because I can't understate the difficulty of installing an EHV transformer either.
Oh.
They are enormous, you know, and they weigh in huge amounts. There's only three railway cars in the whole country that can carry an EHV transformer. When you're trying to move it to the spot, bridges have to be reinforced.
Yeah. Most big equipment like that is built on site. And
when we come back, I kind of would like to hear more on the like specs of that, because that's really quite an undertaking. And if we're going to switch them out, or we think we're going to do that in the future, man, that's going to be something else.
Yeah.
We are here with our guest. Well, not really here. We're here on the radio with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. Kind of feels like he's here because, you know, he likes to hang out with us. And you are listening to We the People. You can find all our information and archives that go back like 10 years at wethepeopleradio.usa.
You want to stay out with your fancy friends. I'm telling you, it's got to be the end.
everything I buy these days has got a foreign name. From the kind of car I drive to my video game,
I got a Nikon camera, a Sony color TV.
But the one that I love is from the USA, standing next to me.
And then he doesn't talk about the electric grid. He talks about his girlfriend or something. So it kind of wrecks it. My whole thing blows up at that point. But I'm interested. What kind of size are we talking about? Can you compare it to like a 3-bedroom house or?
Yes. The sizes kind of depend upon, you know. But yeah, on average, a 2-story, sometimes a 3-story house is in terms of the size.
Yikes!
And the weight is actually much more.
Yeah, how do you move them around and place them?
Well, it's not like you can't go in pieces either, right? It's got to go one big giant thing.
No, the whole thing has to be shipped, transshipped, and no, it can't be broken apart in pieces.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that that can reduce the weight a little is there's a it uses a it has to be cooled. And it's got a radiator
like a big
around.
Radiator
it's filled
on
with heavy oil to absorb the heat, and that you can put off putting that in. That reduces the weight a little bit, but essentially, it's the most of the weight is the core of the thing. You know, which is these miles and miles of cable windings, electrical cable windings that have to be done in a very precise way. That's the heart of the thing that Tesla figured out. And for all of the transformers, even though we have different kinds, I mean, they're all basically the same thing. But getting to the president's executive order again, you know, obviously, as a matter of national security, you know, we really need to start making these things in the United States and reduce our foreign dependence on them. Even if we were relying on getting them from Korea or South Korea and Germany, which is the only two places that supply them for export, that's where we get them. Even that is dangerous. From the thing has to be manufactured there, transshipped over the seas. If you think of the chain of custody,
sure.
It just creates too many opportunities for a hostile foreign intelligence service to get hold of it. And apart from that, there's just also the common sense thing, because something like an EMP can also come from the sun, not from a foreign intelligence service. And if we had something like the Carrington event come back, thousands of these transformers and electric grids all over the world are at risk of being destroyed. You've got the worldwide capability to build them is only 180 per year, okay? So South Korea and Germany might say, we're giving priority to our own electric grid and our own people, and you guys are going to have to get in line and wait. And we don't want a situation like that to come up. So this is a really important executive order. Setting this precedent where protecting the electric grid is going to be given a high priority. At least I hope that will continue past this administration. And it's an important step toward protecting it, recognizing that our dependence on foreign sources, and especially China, is something that we shouldn't be doing. And maybe the coronavirus inspired, but I'm sure the executive order has been in train for quite some time. It takes a long time to write these executive orders because they have to be coordinated with all the departments and agencies. People should understand, this isn't just something that President Trump comes up with off the top of his head. He's usually advised by his National Security Council experts and other strategists that, hey, we need something like this. And then it gets negotiated, including with the deep state, the departments and agencies, and they all have to sign off on it. And that's why the executive orders also sometimes have problems in them. I guess it's unavoidable, because we have to continue to import some of these things, like the transformers, so to try to make up for that. The executive order establishes a special board headed by the Secretary of Energy that will include members of the intelligence community and the Department of Homeland Security and others to review, you know, those purchases that are happening and decide whether it's acceptable for the utilities to purchase a transformer from a particular country or a particular item from a particular country. But for the reasons of the chain of custody, it's risky, even under the best scrutiny, you know, to be purchasing any of them.
Right.
So I'm hoping the long-term solution here. Another risk I would add is within our own system. I mentioned the deep state. You know, we've talked before about how there are so many Obama holdovers embedded within the government in senior executive service positions now, and also this, the general incompetence and stupidity, regardless of their political party, of so many of these bureaucrats. I'm concerned that will the bureaucracy go back to business as usual, be influenced by utilities to go back to business as usual and sign off on things they shouldn't be signing off on. And so you'll end up with a piece of paper that looks like you're protecting yourself, but in terms of its enforcement, it just allows the utilities to go back to business as usual and purchase stuff from overseas companies. You know, really the goal is, and I think this is a really important step in that direction, and I'm sure it's the president's intention that we eventually become self-sufficient in all of the critical equipment.
So the executive order is not necessarily requiring domestic companies to produce. The executive order is just a study, basically, to see where we are vulnerable, and then make recommendations.
Oh no, the effect of the executive order will be that they're going to have to start purchasing more stuff as much as they can from domestic U.S. made in America type sources.
Okay,
that's part of the effect of it. But the order also recognizes that because we don't manufacture a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lead time on things like those transformers, for instance. You know, we just aren't overnight going to be able to become independent on some of these technologies, and therefore, we're going to be very carefully scrutinizing, you know, the risks of purchasing transformers from these groups, and they run the risk, if you want to buy a transformer from South Korea, for example, it might be disapproved. You run the risk of it being disapproved, and it's leaning on the utilities to stop the practice of being dependent on foreign sources and leaning on them to buy American, and encouraging, you know, American companies that used to make these things or that want to make a profit by making things like transformers and control systems to start doing that here in the United States.
Are the components for the grid, say the national grid, are there a lot of components that are being produced overseas, or are there just a few? I mean,
there's a lot.
Yeah, so
all of the transformers we've got right now are from overseas sources.
And the smaller ones, too, not just the big
EHVs. That's right.
Yeah.
One of the things that's ubiquitous, and not just in the electric grid, but there's a particular kind of control system called a SCADA, which is Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition System.
Oh, yeah.
And these are little computers that basically run practically everything in our electronic civilization. You know, when I was growing up in the 60s, and then we had a blue collar workforce, a skilled blue collar workforce comprising probably over a million people who worked for all the critical infrastructures. They would work in the electric industry, in the running gas pipelines, running water systems, and these guys, you know, would do things like, you know, they would watch how much juice is going through the line, and they would control that manually, okay? How much water is passing through a line, control that manually. And they also had the advantage of knowing how the system worked so that if anything went wrong, these human beings, these skilled blue-collar workers would be able to fix the system.
Sure.
And this, it was kind of, people didn't think of it at that as an army at that time, but it was basically kind of a domestic army to maintain our critical infrastructures that, in retrospect, that's kind of what they were. They were our army for those infrastructures, and they all got replaced, or most of them got replaced, during the microelectronics revolution in the 1970s with the invention of these SCADA technologies. Now you can run a whole city, whereas it used to take thousands of people, you know, to run the critical infrastructures for a city. You can run a whole city with a dozen people because the SCADAs are there and to do all of that. And traffic control lights are run by these things. The water system is run by these things. Electrical systems, as I mentioned, natural gas pipelines are run by these systems.
So pretty much everything that we count on to have real civilization.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's a substantial percentage of these systems that we get from China. And, from other foreign countries. So there's enormous amount. Now, we can make those in our country and should be making those in our country, and we can also design them to be hard in the first place against things like EMP and cyber attacks, and that's what we should start doing. So there are immediate, important, good things that this executive order can accomplish by stopping our dependence. You know, next time they want to buy from China or even from South Korea or Taiwan and these SCADA systems, now, hopefully the board that's set up by this executive order is going to say, no way, you've got to stop doing that. You can buy that stuff here in America, and we don't care if it costs you a little more.
Right.
You know,
see,
the national security risk is too great, you know, to continue these foreign dependencies. And that can start immediately.
I'm so curious. When we come back, I'm really curious why. I mean, it's not like the people that run the utility companies live somewhere else. I mean, they live here. So why would they put their own lives and family and everything at risk? And you would think that they would know better than anyone that without this critical infrastructure, we become a third world country, basically, you know, mostly overnight. So maybe we could hit that a little bit when we come back. We've got to do a little salute to capitalism here. You can find us at We the People Radio, and you can find us on the American Uncensored Network.
We have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're in the dark and you want to see, you need a
electricity, electricity.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a
electricity, electricity.
Every room can now be lit with just a
electricity, electricity.
Where do you think it all comes from? This powerful
electricity.
Yeah, I thought the little Schoolhouse Rock song was important because that's mostly when most of us stopped looking at how electricity works. That's the end of our education right
I'm
there.
I'm sure most people don't even give that a passing thought. They just throw the switch be there, you
but,
know?
But why do you think that the big power companies and big and little ones, I mean, I guess I don't care how big they are, why wouldn't – you would think those people would be just running with their hair on fire trying to harden the grid. I've never understood why that isn't happening.
I know. I'm a big fan of libertarianism, and one of the libertarian argument is that, you know, you can leave these utilities alone, the private sector alone, because they should take actions to protect their own interests. But in reality, that has never been true. You know, utility executives, people in NERC, and their lobbying groups that they hire, and the Electric Power Research Institute and the like, they're not experts on EMP or cyber warfare. What do they know about those things? They don't know anything about those things. National security isn't their field. You know, what their job is to do is to make a profit for their company, and to provide most cost-effectively cheap electricity to their customers to keep the customers happy. And a lot of times there's a tension between providing for security and making those profits and keeping their customers happy. That's why we have government. I mean, the founders were the ultimate libertarians. They believed, that government governs best, which governs least, but they didn't think you could eliminate government altogether because you need government to take a longer view and think about public safety and national security when doing these things. And we have just many examples in our history where this has been so. You know, before we had a Pure Food and Drug Administration, which came online in the progressive era under Teddy Roosevelt, okay? You know, Coca-Cola really did put cocaine into its sodas, and you could end up with thumbs in your can of peaches, and you know all about the muckrakers, exposing the horrific kinds of things that were happening in the meat industry, and so we needed to put online a federal agency to make sure that we would have pure food and drugs, before we had a Federal Aviation Administration. You know, a lot of aircraft crashes were always attributed to pilot error, and the airlines didn't want to admit that there might have been some kind of a design flaw. But now we have an FAA that decides what went wrong when a plane went down and forces the airlines to correct that, and they have the authority to ground a whole fleet if that becomes necessary. You know, it's very easy to convince yourself when you're the one making a profit that the thing you're doing to save money is in the public interest from a safety standpoint, too. I mean, look at the Zeppelin industry, They convinced themselves that through operational procedures, they could make travel by hydrogen balloon safe and never have any tragically, so they could save money and not buy helium, which is not flammable, not an explosive gas. And as the long-term consequences were disastrous for them, and they went out of business, because of the Hindenburg. So, it's not the only. We have safety glass in cars and seat belts in cars and bumpers that are more effective not because of innovations or decisions by the private sector to do that, but those were mandated by the government. And, the electric grid has gotten away with these irresponsible behaviors for so long, or has the real irresponsible behavior been by the government that hasn't done its job by thinking about the national security implications of an unprotected electric grid? One could blame the government more than the industry itself. After all, it is true. It's not their job to think about national security. And most of the difficulty and problem has been persuading the federal bureaucracy, forcing the federal bureaucracy, really, through this president and this administration, that, they do have to think of it, include electric grid security in part of the national security paradigm as we go forward. So finally, it's taken 20 years of effort by groups like the EMP Commission and my colleagues to finally get where we are today. It's not testimony that our system works very well, because, when I was an EMP expert at the CIA many years ago, one of the first jobs I had when I moved over to the House Armed Services Committee professional staff was to educate and brief members of that committee on the EMP threat, which was deeply classified at that time, and most of them had never even heard of it. And I thought, well, this was back in 1995. I thought, great. We'll educate the Congress. We'll educate the House Armed Services Committee. And in a year, a bill will get passed, and this problem will be fixed, and I can go on and do something else with my life. I never expected or wanted to be Mr. EMP. But here we are. It's year 2020. And finally, the problem looks like it's finally getting solved. It's been a long, hard slog. Yeah. And maybe when it comes to, we had started off talking about topics to talk about, but maybe we shouldn't let the opportunity pass since the issue has come up about the deep state and the like, that maybe we should talk a little about General Flynn.
Somewhat illuminating, huh?
Yeah, right. You know, Mike Wallace, I caught on, is that his name? Is it Mike? Chris Wallace.
Chris Wallace, right.
Just before I came upstairs to sort of review my mail and wait for the interview, I heard Chris Wallace say, as I was leaving the room, that one of the topics they were going to talk about on his show was General Flynn, and why is it that charges are being dropped against a man who has admitted that he lied? And I almost fell. I mean, you know, for Fox News of all groups, maybe
except
I should
that, that guy, that
Chris
guy.
Wallace, who tends yeah. to be a who's a Democrat after all, but that's his take. That's his take on the significance of all this.
Yeah.
Just astonishing.
What an excellent news reporter, huh? Obviously
yeah.
took all the facts and
yeah.
arrived at that decision on his own.
Talk about Watergate. I mean, this, you know, this literally, the revelations, now that we actually have, we have talked about this before, and lots of people have talked about the possibility, the likelihood that this was a coup d'etat, you know,
mm-hmm.
an attempted coup d'etat. What the founders feared most, that the administrative state itself, you know, would go the way of Greece and Rome, you know, by powerful government apparatchiks trying to take over. And that's exactly what happened, and now we've got it. I mean, the documents, I think, to an objective person, you know, prove it. They prove a guilt in the Obama administration, at least among his top lieutenants, if not among for the president himself, of an effort to shred the Constitution, to destroy the thing that is most important about our constitutional republic, which is the peaceful transition and legitimate transition of power, and an effort to sabotage that incoming president and destroy mm-hmm. his top lieutenants,
right.
weaponizing the legal system and the intelligence system to do that. It's such a shocking, appalling thing. And, well, you know, that maybe what more needs to be said about it except...
Well, he was kind of a linchpin. I mean, he had... I guess, knowledge in so many different areas, he would have been the guy that could have helped them navigate the minefield when they came in. And instead, without that tour guide, if you will, they were swallowed by it and were up against the,
well, yeah.
the news here.
He was the one guy that could expose everything that had gone on up to this point.
We're going
to
talk about it
yeah.
some more when we come right back. We've got to take a five-minute news thing. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, We the People Radio. US. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
We're always so tempered the second half. We're kind of like lulled in.
We're on our game.
The racing has
yeah.
stopped. We're not no longer running
oh, yeah.
in.
We're all
we should
over
go
it.
Run around out in the lobby and come back in so
nah,
we sound more
need,
normal.
I get plenty of exercise. I watch what I eat and get plenty of rest. That's my motto.
Huh.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Hey, our sponsor this
let
hour.
That slide.
What?
Ashley just fell down on the soundboard.
Those are important. Those are important things.
Uh-huh.
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer.
That's where Bill gets all his rest. Oh, no, wait, he doesn't.
No. Pape Machinery is your local go-to for ag tractors, turf equipment, Honda generators, steel power products. They've got it all down there. Go ahead and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. And they also do service. So if you got you went out there to jump on your mower and nothing's jiving,
it's just a giant paperweight.
Yep, get down there, take it down there. They'll get it fired up and get it going for you.
And since we're talking about the electric power grid, PG&E out here in California is already putting out notices that they will be shutting the power off again this year when
yes,
you know,
they
will. Decide that you're power's going through somewhere scary that has too many trees.
Don't rush down to get in line to go in and buy a generator because everybody else will be out of them.
Yep.
So you should plan ahead early. Yeah.
Plan ahead. So let's see. You can find all the archives for 10 years of this program. We've covered, I mean, everything really, soup to nuts. We're actually starting to get banned from some stuff. Robert said we got banned from Vimeo because we used the Wuhan. What did we say? The Wuhan virus or something in our title? Boo.
You can't say that.
Can't say Wuhan virus.
Yep.
So, don't tell Vimeo, but we're going to change the title and then, then repost it. I'm using the term we loosely. Robert will be doing that. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah.
And another one of Robert's many skills is he cuts this into video and puts it out for Tuesday nights on KRDT Channel 23.7 on the American Uncensored Network.
That's right.
So there you go.
Yep. You could see our smiling radio faces on television.
And the archives are always free. And we have, although we love capitalism, we cut it out for the archives. So
yeah.
We salute capitalism during the show, but then after the show, capitalism is only on the online.
Only the meat and potatoes
online.
We
have good capitalism online, though. You can go look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Dr. Pry, let's go back to General Flynn. Do you have the rundown on all the things where he was really steeped in a lot of knowledge that would have protected the administration, and without him, I think that's how they kind of got shot out of the saddle there at the beginning?
Yeah, I think Molly Hemingway's article in the Federalist really lays it out well and lays out well the arguments and reconstructs from the now released information. And there's more information that's going to be coming out that's supposed to be just as shocking as the materials that have been released so far, that they had two goals. One was to knock out General Flynn. And this apparently was a goal that President Obama himself personally had, because not only was Flynn, did he know the intelligence community inside out, because he had been the director of the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is as important as the CIA is. It's less well known, but it's just as important, just as powerful. It's basically the Department of Defense's intelligence agency. And so here's a man of long experience who knew the intelligence agencies well, and he also knew a lot of the skeletons, about what the Obama administration had done wrong over 8 years. And we now know from what's been released that, that Obama himself was afraid of General Flynn, because when he met with Trump in the Oval Office during the transition, he only warned Trump about two people, to be leery of two people. One was Kim Jong-un in North Korea, and the other was General Flynn, his national security advisor. He didn't want General Flynn to be President Trump's national security advisor. And you're right. I mean, that's the conclusion Molly Hemingway draws, too, because here's a guy who knew how the system worked. So many of the incoming Trump people were naive. They certainly didn't have the kind of background that Flynn had in the intelligence community. And so Flynn would be able to uncover and expose the coup plot that happened, which was really led, I think, by probably by CIA. I think this is probably started with Brennan's idea, and Obama probably signed off on it, and then he incorporated and pulled together the Department of Justice and the FBI to do the rest of the orchestration. The other person that they needed to knock out, and he did self-destruct, was Jeff Sessions, the guy who's going to be the Attorney General. And that's what when Sessions recused himself, and I have no doubt that the requirement during his hearings they can't impose requirements on administration people, but Sessions basically foolishly gave them the promise that he was going to recuse himself, and then, being an honorable man, went above and beyond recusing himself from these things, and became so manipulated and such a toy of the coup plotters that at one time they actually talked, you may recall earlier, about about one of the members, they were thinking about having a member of the Justice Department wear a wire and go in and have a and try to trip up the president that way by wearing a wire. They actually thought that they might be able to get Jeff Sessions to wear that wire. God. He was so much in their control and in their thrall. So, unfortunately, you know, those two, those were the two champions that could have protected the president. And with them, both of them knocked out, neutralized, you know, it left the president's flank just wide open for no White House oversight to what was happening. And so they were able to get away with this Mueller investigation and, you know, that paralyzed the administration for so long. It's such an enormous, this is a potential hinge moment in our future history. I was going to try to say as kind of a joke before about, you know, about all the important things in history that have happened on Mother's Day. You know, this right. is May 10th, Mother's Day, right? And, you know, the historian's joke looking at Mother's Day. In 537 A.D., for example, King Arthur defeated Mordred in, you know, the Titanic apocalyptic battle concluding the Arthurian saga, which some historians think is true. In fact, I think most of them think is true today. In 1940, Winston Churchill, you know, became the wartime Prime Minister of Great Britain. So, as a historian, I find it interesting that on certain dates, huge things happen like that. You know, Churchill becoming Prime Minister on that day. And on this date in 1775, you know, the Continental Congress met to basically begin the American Revolution. And they had a little choice because simultaneously on this date, Patriots captured Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York, you know, one of the most important fortresses, British fortresses. And so, in effect, the shots had already been fired for the American Revolution on this day. And now, on shows like this all across the country, the American people are going to be put to the test about how do we react to this coup attempt. Are we going to go along? I mean, obviously, President Obama himself has finally come out from under the covers and is screaming like a scorched cat about the evil injustice of the Trump administration, that he's weaponizing right. the Department of Justice. And are people going to believe that? Or are they going to believe their eyes and their ears and their brains and understand what has happened, what the previous administration tried to do and demand justice? You know, people need to go to jail for this. This is not enough to just sweep it under the rug and
just expose it. Yeah, exposing it isn't enough.
It isn't enough.
Well, it won't stop it from happening again if it's only exposed and, you know, everybody gets their wrists slapped. It's going to happen again.
It comes back.
I guarantee you, unless people go to jail and unless they move quickly, for sure it's going to happen again. And it's going to happen in this next election because these guys have no choice now. Now that the lid is off, they can't afford to have President Trump get reelected.
No,
you know, because that means that many of their lieutenants are going to be prosecuted.
Yep.
And who knows what it might happen to? I mean, we've never had a situation like this where the President of the United States himself has been implicated as the leader of an attempted coup d'état against the successor. Is there some punishment? You can't impeach the guy again. I mean,
never say never.
Minimum,
the Democrats have hope springs eternal.
A huge embarrassment for the president. That and certainly we're looking at people who are former CIA directors and FBI directors and Justice Department people looking at possible jail time here as a consequence of this, and they will do everything they can to avoid that.
Which would never break anyone's heart.
Huh? No, it won't.
We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
Need a country to stabilize. Look no further. Suits and ties. And a better dental plan than the FBI.
Better put your hands up and get in the van, or else you'll get blown away. Staging a cool like it. Brainwashing moles like it. We only torture the folks we don't like. You're probably gonna be okay.
You're gonna be okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA.
See, normally you would think, like, that man you were kissing last night definitely wasn't me, and you think, what's that got to do with the FBI? But then, you know, you start thinking about the Strzok and Page thing and all their little text messages back and forth. And
the lovers.
The lovers. Yeah, that's what they call them on TV all the time. How'd you like to be branded the lover?
Oh, she was the lover.
And that song is super old, so, you know.
Well, you know, the documents that they just released are starting to point directly to Obama. As knowing, and I don't know if he's, well, you know he was orchestrating it, but I don't know if they can prove that. With that being said, and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but...
I was told he did.
Well, do you think they'll go that far with it? I mean, I've always believed that when you get that high up, it's a slap on the wrist, and there's two sets of laws, it looks like, in this country. But this is so huge.
Think it's bad enough?
Yeah, this is so huge. What do you think? Do you think they'll actually go for prosecution on some of these folks?
I hope so. You know, I really, otherwise, our constitutional republic, well, it isn't a constitutional republic anymore.
No.
I think I've mentioned that. Not really. You know, I think one of the other revelations about this is that we really are in the midst of a cold civil war where you've got one party that doesn't respect the Constitution, doesn't obey the rules, doesn't obey the law, is totally obsessed with power, so much so that they're willing to do anything to reverse the outcome, even of a presidential election. That's the reality. That's the truth. That's what we're looking
at. They're like
here.
The embodiment
you
of
situational
ethics.
You can't have a constitutional republic
ethics.
World in one side obeys the law and respects the Constitution.
No.
So we're not in a constitutional republic. And the issue is, are we going to get it back? And to get it back, you know, you've got to start by punishing. Now, will the system do that? We should do that, but I am very discouraged and demoralized, frankly, that it's taken this long, you know, under, you know, President Trump. And I don't just blame, obviously, the Democrats are to blame, but when we had controlled all three houses, you know, the Republicans under Paul Ryan in the House, they did nothing.
Nope.
They did nothing. You know, they didn't use their subpoena powers. They did nothing to try to expose this. And the deep state has managed to conceal all this right up until practically the last possible minute. Now we're in this election year. I mean, if they knew this stuff had to come out and they finally had to yield to Bill Barr, releasing it at this time is the most dangerous time to do it, you know, when we're on the verge of another presidential election.
Yeah.
You know, when you're saying, hey, you guys got to take this guy out or there's a possibility of you going to jail if he's reelected. So far, we haven't even been able to put Peter Strzok in jail.
No.
You know, or Lisa Page. And these people are living well. They're going around and treated as heroes, celebrated by heroes by a lot of the media. They've got book deals, and they've profited off of their crimes. So I don't have a lot of confidence that the system is gonna work. I know what everyone's heaping praise on Bill Barr for accomplishing what he's accomplished so far, but I'm not sure that he has the in terms of his behavior so far. You know, I've been disappointed. I'm not sure that that he understands what a crisis and what a full-scale emergency this is. So that, and I know there are a lot of people still in the White House, which is one of the reasons this has taken so long, so-called moderate Republicans or establishment Republican types, you know, on the legal team, who are going to argue that for the sake of our constitutional republic, you know, we should put oil on the waters and turn a blind eye to all this and let it go away. You know, the Democrats never do that when they're in power.
No.
You know, and I'm not just talking about this crop of Democrats who are totalitarians, but it going back over the decades, look what happened to President Nixon, right? Who probably, in retrospect now that we know who some of these personalities are, you know, Bernstein is still out there, you know, as part of the media leading the charge against President Trump and all the like. It should raise people's questions in people's minds about the legitimacy of his original reporting and his good intentions on the original reporting that got Nixon impeached, you know? So, always this double standard, you know, where the Republicans go to jail and the Democrats don't.
And for little to nothing. I mean, the whole General Flynn thing, even at the time and without all this backstory, seemed stupid. I mean, they asked him the
General
same question twice. He answered
the
question slightly different, and now he's in jail? It's like, what?
Yeah, General Flynn was doing his job. He's supposed to talk to the Russians as the incoming national security advisor. You know, if he wasn't doing his job, if he wasn't talking to the Russians, he wouldn't have been doing his job. And the idea that he lied, I think most of your audience probably knows this, but I keep hearing that issue coming up. You know, any one of us, you know, federal laws are so pervasive. Any one of us could be easily tripped up into being put in the same position that General Flynn is, you know, by lying to the FBI. Lying, K.T. McFarland has written an excellent book. You know, we haven't heard much about her, but they tried to do the same thing to her.
Yeah.
General Flynn ended up confessing. General Flynn, in effect, lied about lying. He didn't lie. And the FBI said he didn't lie. But he had to say that he lied. In other words, lie that he lied so that they wouldn't prosecute his son and go after his son. And so that there would be an end to the destruction of his family and what was left of his family fortune. You know, he'd gone bankrupt. That exhausted his financial resources, and nobody was coming to his rescue from the White House. You know, he had been professionally and personally destroyed by all of this, and so he saw no way out but by surrendering to what the FBI was trying to do to him. This happens all the time, where people will confess to something they didn't do, and it's another part of our so-called justice. System of justice that really should be corrected, you know, because we know this happens to innocent people who get caught up in it. You know, in this case, it was part of a deliberate coup plot,
right?
And the Department of Justice.
Well, how can they prosecute him for this lie, supposedly, but nobody prosecutes any of these other jackwagons that went before the congressional committees, now
totally
obviously lied through their teeth, and nobody is pressing anything forward on prosecuting any of them for perjury, because they were sworn under oath when they testified, and they testified to a lie.
Yeah, well, that's because when Paul Ryan was in charge of the House, you know, he wouldn't let any of the chairmen issue subpoenas, and he wouldn't give permission to prosecute anybody for lying to Congress. Congress, at least when Congress is controlled by Republicans, you know, has educated the deep state that there is no penalty and no risk to lying to Congress. So they lie to Congress all the time. And Congress really needs to write a statute, so, you know, to make it... if there isn't already a statute, they need a better, more and clearer and more current one.
Yeah, I think there already
that would
is.
Would automatically make it a felony and automatically send you to jail if you lie to Congress.
Well, I think there's already got to be something on the books. I mean, otherwise, why would you go in there and take an oath if lying is going to be okay, what's the point of even taking an oath before you testify?
Well, it makes all the hearings moot point, which is, I think, what's already happening.
And I think they can go back. I don't see any reason why the DOJ can't go back now.
Okay.
DOJ, go back now and look at those testimonies and see that they lied and press for prosecution. They have to.
Yeah, we have General Clapper on numerous occasions lying to Congress.
I hate that guy.
You know, for example, about whether NSA was collecting on communications intelligence from domestic Americans.
Oh, yeah, I can still see him
twirling his eyebrow, wittingly or unwittingly.
Well, another thing that Congress should do is start deconstructing some of the power of the deep state. You know, by canceling the law, you know, that makes it a crime, a felony, to lie to a federal official. I've never liked that. You know, the federal government is not God. Yes, that's going to let bad guys off the hook, but we have seen now General Flynn, for example, and I suspect that this is standard operating procedure for a lot of what they do, you know, that this was used, this power was abused, this law was abused by them. And, you know, so that ought to be changed. And it's too bad if it disadvantages the Department of Justice and the police apparatus, the FBI, you know, if they were to be deprived of that. But too much there, we have to eliminate.
Well, they hold all the
cards.
The concept
of process crimes.
Yeah.
You know, where people who are innocent, who have not committed any crime, but then they can catch you up and convict you of a process crime because you supposedly lied. And is it a lie? I mean, by definition, for example, K.T. McFarland describes a situation where she didn't remember the exact date and time, and they tried to mischaracterize that as a lie because she made an honest mistake in her testimony to them. You know, this kind of patent overreach and abuse, you know, they just have lost our confidence, and laws that were based on the idea that the FBI and the Department of Justice were squeaky clean and we could trust these guys to execute the law fairly and then with the intent that was intended, they've proven that they aren't trustworthy, and they are criminals themselves. We're dealing with a criminal justice department.
Yeah, and at this point, it seems
FBI
like they're
at the top.
Yeah, they're all at the top. Yeah, it's not even like it's all over the country. I mean, it seems to all be there in Washington, and they all seem to hang out together. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us and on the American Uncensored Network. 23.7 Tuesday nights.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire. The ring of fire.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
That's what we'll play at the party after they all go to jail.
Yeah.
Or maybe that should become our national theme song, Underground. All the people that are going after these rats. So in the domino effect, just out of curiosity, Dr. Pry, if we saw like prosecution of somebody, who do you think that would start the like the dominoes falling? Like who do you think is the linchpin on this telegraph, you know?
I think Brennan, the CIA director, you know, he might not be the easiest one to get because I don't know what the evidence is that they've got and how well he's covered his tracks. But I'll bet it was his bright idea.
Well, he's kind of a boob and he keeps talking, so, you know, that's kind of great.
Yeah.
Maybe,
the reason I think that he's probably the person who came up with this idea and sold it to President Obama was because of the National Intelligence Estimate, you know. It was basically him and Clapper, you know, to put together the fake National Intelligence Estimate at the end of the Obama administration, beginning of the Trump administration, that claimed that the Russians wanted Trump to win and had interfered with U.S. elections to create this mythology that somehow, you know, Trump got elected because of the Russians. And it feeds into the idea that, oh, there must have been collusion, you know, between Russia and Trump. And the fact that that was an unclassified national intelligence estimate, which is very rare, you know, because they wanted, obviously, this to become the narrative in the liberal mainstream media, which was the, you know, a huge effort to discredit, to delegitimize the Trump presidency. Going, before we, because I know we're running out of time, oh, these are such troubled times, and I always hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but there's a number of other national security events that might be of interest to the audience that I'd kind of like to talk about.
Far away.
Before we completely run out of time.
Sure.
And, you know, here we have this unprecedented threat of an attempted coup against the president, and now we're going to be going into, I think, a real crisis about how we respond to this. But while this is also happening, our enemies are doing everything they can to get the upper hand on us. A couple of weeks ago, we had Iran, not just Iran, but the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, orbit a satellite over the United States. And, you know, this is the first time the IRGC has orbited a military satellite. You know, they are the deadliest terrorist organization in the world. They've killed more Americans than any other terrorist organization. And now these guys have orbited a satellite over the United States and have received very little media attention. The IRGC itself was pleasantly surprised that we had such a passive reaction to the fact that we did nothing. We didn't shoot down their satellite or take any retaliatory action against them. And they, because they thought that we would react militarily, and said that they were prepared to attack 400 targets if in their retaliation in case we acted militarily. Now they're going to go forward and launch another satellite sometime in June. So this is a very bad development. And, you know, maybe we're just so distracted by the coronavirus and everything, but I really wish the president would follow the advice of the EMP Commission and shoot down both the North Korean and now this Iranian satellite and any other satellite that North Korea or Iran tries to orbit over the United States. The satellites are illegal. They're not supposed to be launching them. And they pose a potential existential threat, you know, because if they orbited a nuke and did an EMP attack, that would be it for us. You know, the commission warned that the two North Korean satellites that currently orbit over us, we don't know, but those things could be armed for a nuclear EMP attack. Their trajectory is very suspicious. The altitude that they pass over us is very suspicious. And the Iranian satellite has a very similar altitude and trajectory. And North Koreans, by the way, are in Iran. They're a strategic partner of Iran. You know, they help Iran with their missile programs, probably with their nuclear program. We think the North Koreans have got a super EMP weapon. All they have to do is give the IRGC that super weapon and put it on a future satellite. And
do you think we have the technology to take out a satellite?
Yes, we do. You know, we've got a number of ways of being able to do that. And in fact, we took out one of our own satellites in the past that was in a deteriorating orbit and shot it down with an Aegis missile defense ship. That was our recommendation, that we use something like an Aegis guided missile cruiser. You know, you could put a special interceptor around that, so the satellite could be intercepted over a broad ocean area, you know, say maybe near Antarctica or over the Pacific someplace, so that if the weapon does have a nuke on it and it's rigged for salvage fusing, it would do little or no damage to humanity if you detonated it, intercepted it way out there someplace. So we've got the ability to do
maybe
that.
Maybe I'll detonate it so it lands on their homeland. Send it back to them.
I'm sure the State Department, though, is advising the president not to do that, because that would represent our weaponization of space, and would give the green light, they would say, to China and Russia and North Korea and Iran to start shooting down our satellites, and we depend more on our satellites then, but our satellites aren't loaded with nukes or anything, and we can always replace those peaceful satellites. We can't afford to have one nuclear-armed satellite or have them learn how to do this to deliver those payloads over us. So, anyway, that's one piece of bad news in terms of the developments. Another thing that happened since last we last talked was the State Department, speaking of the bad guys,
okay,
you know, has put out their year annual compliance report. They, every year, by law, they're required to put out a report on arms control compliance or noncompliance with the various treaties. And I wrote an article about this several weeks ago. You know, these arms control reports, usually almost nobody pays attention to them, you know. And Washington has just gotten used to the State Department admitting that Russia and China and North Korea and Iran and other countries are often in violation of these arms control treaties, and we're not in violation. We always go overboard, in fact. Not only do we adhere to the letter of the treaties, but we go beyond that, as we did with the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. And one, this got only got people's attention because even some of the liberal mainstream media appreciated that that it was significant that Russia and China are cheating on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty and have been doing it for 28 years, while the United States hasn't tested nuclear weapons for 28 years.
Wow.
You know, they've been engaged in low-yield testing to develop new generations of nuclear weapons. So we're almost three decades behind them in advanced nuclear weapons technology. And that's just one treaty violation. They've also cheated on the Chemical and Biological Weapons Conventions and the Tactical Nuclear Agreement under the Presidential Nuclear Initiative and other type treaties. But after all of this, you know, one of the things I had recommended in the article is that Washington's got to wake up and start taking these arms control violations seriously, the way President Trump did. I mean, we finally withdraw from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty because the Russians have been cheating on it for many years. Both the State Department, the intelligence community, and the Obama administration conspired to conceal from Congress the Russian violations of these treaties. And that's part of the bad news, by the way. Another, make the bad news worse, the State Department, I actually think, underestimates the magnitude of cheating. You know, their bread and butter is these arms control agreements. And so they're always very reluctant to acknowledge when there is cheating on the arms control agreements. The state would argue that Russia is still in compliance with the New START treaty, for example. I and other analysts think there's really compelling evidence that the Russians are not in compliance with New START, that they're cheating on that treaty too. And I don't know. It seems to me a fundamental failure of a basic intelligence test. You know, when you see treaty after treaty after treaty, you know, the Russians finally, it turns out that they're cheating on them, but then you want to convince yourself, oh, no, but they're obeying the New START treaty. That treaty, there is no evidence, is usually the way it's put. There is no evidence that they're cheating on the New START treaty. Well, part of the reason there's no evidence is because when they negotiated that treaty, the verification provisions are so weak that it's hard to get evidence.
Sure. And then if they lie about it, we have to accept it.
The State Department plays, and it puts our national security at risk. But now I'm concerned, you know, that President Trump has been talked by the State Department into possibly holding a summit with Putin to talk about engaging in a new arms control treaty. In fact, they're talking about a grand arms control bargain, an arms control grand bargain with Russia and China, where China will now become part of, you know, a strategic nuclear arms control treaty. Well, you can't trust either of them.
No.
They've been cheating on all these treaties, and the net effect of this will be to undermine President Trump's efforts to modernize our nuclear forces. You know, that's always the effect of these arms control treaties.
Yeah, because it ties our hands because we'll follow it, but it doesn't tie theirs because they won't.
Well, he did a pretty good job with North Korea, though. I mean, we didn't really give anything up until they provided evidence that they were doing what they were supposed to do, which they didn't. And I think that's got to be the same thing with Russia and China. If we can't verify it, the treaty's worthless.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to be the fun killer again. One last break here. We will be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bryan. If you really want 2 hours to go by quickly, like if you were ever in captivity, you need to call Dr. Pry because he can make time go by like nobody's business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He burned 2 hours with you in seconds. You can find everything about this show and our time traveling experiences at wethepeopleradio.us.
But I've old glory and awaken a dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise.
Thought you'd change the weather, start a little storm, make a little rain. But I'm gonna do one better. Until you pray, I'm a tornado, looking for a soul to take. You're gonna see me coming by the selfish things that you did. I'm gonna leave you guessing how this funnel is gonna hit. I'm a tornado, looking for a man to break.
I think that should be the Trump 2.0 theme song.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be like a tornado in his second term. He's got
nothing
to lose.
That's kind of the way I picture it, you know.
Yeah, he can turn them all loose on the deep state in the second term.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
So with the State Department, you know, we don't hear a whole lot about them, but I do think the American public got a good look at the State Department during the coronavirus because there were people who were trapped all over the world in countries that don't have such great communications necessarily, don't have super great infrastructure. And it took folks a long time to get out of India, to get out of Malta, to get out of all these different places. And in a lot of cases, people called the embassy or went to the embassy, and there's like a note on the door that said, oh, we went home. Like the virus hit and they blew town. So interestingly enough, the American public doesn't have a lot of contact with the State Department, but a lot of folks have recently, and not all those interactions were super positive.
Well, I'm very concerned that, you know, Trump's new, his national security advisor is O'Brien, a guy from the State Department. You know, he's part of the State Department bureaucracy, and I think because President Trump trusts Mike Pompeo so much, who is our Secretary of State, you know, that this is where a lot of this faith, in misplaced faith in arms control, you know, is coming from. It's really the kiss of death. When you get into the arms control process of negotiation, it becomes the kiss of death for building up American military and nuclear strength. That has always been the case. You know, a lot of establishment Republicans and Democrats will end up arguing, well, why should we build that new missile? Or why do we need to build up these conventional forces when we're in the process of negotiating a treaty with these guys? And it'll normalize relations, and maybe we won't, you know, if we get a treaty with them to normalize the number of nukes we have, we won't need these systems, so we can save a lot of money.
Well, I agree. If we weaken our position
of arms control, that's how the argument, how it's used, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because that works everywhere.
Yeah, if we weaken our position, they'll weaken theirs. Yeah, that's that always works.
We're talking at the beginning of the show about how China is now talking about building, you know, 100 of their new DF-41 ICBMs. Like each of those ICBMs carries 10 warheads. And, you know, so they'd have 1,000 warheads just on that one system. And, and saying, well, maybe it's time for us to do that. They're talking about that just at a time when we are, our State Department is reaching out to Russia and China to negotiate an arms control treaty, right? You know, and I wonder, you know, is it possible that the arms control treaty process is going to be used for China to come out of the closet? They probably already have 100 DF AK-41s, okay?
Right.
And they've just been concealing them from us. And so now it's an excuse to bring them out, and so that instead of them being a tiny nuclear power, as our State Department and intelligence community has been thinking wrongly, I believe, for many decades, they can use the cover of the arms control thing to say, oh, well, you know, yeah, we'll agree to arms control, but it has to be on a basis of equality. And by the way, here we are, we've got these 100 DF-41 ICBMs that you guys didn't know about. And so now we'll have a power, you know, we'll in effect basically be outnumbered by far more than 2-1, you know, because Russia and China are basically strategic partners. But so the arms control process, and I have to comment, I don't think it's worked in North Korea either. You know, just because Kim Jong-un hasn't set off any more nuclear weapons or launched any ICBMs, you know, there's a recent report, they've built this huge facility for ICBMs. You know, they had, back in 2017, they basically demonstrated that they had mastered the ability to make ICBMs. And they've clearly demonstrated the capability. They've got a hydrogen bomb. So, you know, they've taken a break from testing these things because they achieved their technological goal. And, you know, but they haven't stopped making long-range missiles or nuclear weapons. They're continuing to manufacture them. And that's so it's not like we haven't lost ground. You know, what they're trying to do is build up enough of a nuclear deterrent so that we won't have a military option anymore. And we're going to have to live with a nuclear-armed North Korea. And I consider that to be a huge failure. I don't blame it entirely on President Trump. I mean, Obama and Clinton and Bush before them, those administrations deserve by far most of the blame because they could have struck when before North Korea was able to reach out and hit us with a nuke. You know, and so perhaps President Trump really hasn't had any choice, you know, since he inherited a North Korea that already could strike the United States. But things are not rosy in that front either. Looks like we're almost out of time. I disagree that the time flies because of me. I listen to you guys with your repartee, your humorous repartee, for 2 hours quite easily.
Well, with the lack of PhDs on our side of the aisle, all we can do is be silly.
Someday I hope I can come out there and buy you two a couple of big steaks at the Black Bear Diner.
I know. We need to run that ad. Well, since no one's allowed to go anywhere, you can't advertise anything because you can't go there. Isn't it nuts? My mom was telling Bill this morning she went to the pet food place down in the Bay Area, and they met her at the door. And then
they greeted her at the door, asked her if she needed a cart or a basket. She said a basket. So they picked up the basket and led her through the store. Now, I don't know if this is just because she was like 80, but they led her through the store. She pointed at what she wanted. They put it in the basket. She was not allowed to touch anything. And she accidentally touched a can on the shelf.
The Oompa Loompas ran out from the back.
and the gal grabs it and says, oh, no, don't touch it. And they wiped it off and put it back on the... And basically put all the stuff she wanted in the basket and took it to the front counter so she didn't have to touch anything. Which, boy, I don't know.
Oh,
that's,
boy.
Yeah.
Somewhat unsustainable.
Overreaction.
It is a total overreaction.
Yeah, and I wish President Trump would stop calling this the plague. In his public coronavirus task force hearing, he refers to it as the plague.
No.
I mean,
yeah, can you do something about that for us?
People that, you know, understand. Well, I'm hoping eventually the president will just admit that he made a mistake. He listened to these people. Fauci could turn out to be President Trump's Rasputin.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
You know, he just seems to be enthralled with these people who have gotten everything wrong, and the American people are suffering immensely for it. And our national security will suffer for it, too. I don't believe that we're going to be able to bring the economy back so quickly. I think that this economic downturn, could well be a depression, a protracted depression.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think a lot of these businesses will be able to come back. I think
not under the restrictions that idiot governors like ours are doing.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of businesses never reopen.
But you know, there's a lot of fighting back going on. You have a lot of counties. I mean, up here we have counties that have had zero cases, not just that nobody died, but no one was ever diagnosed with it. So how long do they have to stay closed? That makes no sense.
Right.
So people are starting to kind of fight back. It's like, okay, you can't keep me in the house forever. Interestingly enough, I heard from a real estate agent here not very long ago. They said there's a lot of interest in rural property these days. Huh. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Huh. We were all idiots before.
What are you seeing where you're at, Dr. Pry? What's the general consensus?
In 1 minute or less.
Well, I'm surprised. So, you know, where I live, on Lake Anna in Louisa County, I'm near some of the great battlefields of the Civil War. And, you know, people make their living here as farmers and small shopkeepers. And it's very much the way it was, you know, in terms of their values and attitudes, you know, back in the Civil War.
Sure.
But I'm surprised that even here you've got a lot of people wearing masks and engaged in political, you know. However, I haven't met anybody yet. When I talk to people, the people I've talked to, checkout girls and the like, neighbors, I haven't met anybody who thinks it's the plague. Everybody I know also thinks that it's really an overreaction.
Yeah.
And
you start to run the numbers and you just go.
But the people that wear masks don't talk to me. You know?
Well,
those people, I'm sure, have completely different attitudes.
Sure.
One positive thing about it is that maybe a lot of American men are rediscovering how attractive a woman's eyes are.
Good.
That's it.
Point.
That's what's happening. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us. And we hope you have a lovely rest of Mother's Day, whatever you get to do.
Yep. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers
and
out there.
To all the moms. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.